Welcome to the Weekend Review, a look back on the week that was in the States of Southeast. My name's Gerry Callan and joined in the pod by Celine Fernanda from the Top Rating Morning Show. Hello, Celine.
When was the last time we did some ratings?
Before you joined, actually.
Right, 1960.
Yeah. The world was in black and white and Mark De Bono was still in shorts. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, good.
That's the way.
No comment.
Yeah, quite right, too. Talking about when you were in shorts and education, Monash University. See the link? See the thing I did there?
No.
It's a bit tenuous. Monash University, Gippsland's campus. Yeah. Many conversations over many years about its future, about its relevance, about how its recruitment is going, of local students in particular. Again, very much in the spotlight. Why?
Because of the journalism course, effectively a part of that course being cut. It's a single degree, isn't it, Mark? I'm just trying to think of the best way to describe it.
It's a Bachelor of Arts in Journalism, majoring in journalism, yeah.
Right, for a non-academic like myself. Thank you for explaining that. It's been taken off the schedule, so to speak, for next year and will be returning in a new rebadged and rebranded form in 2014, apparently.
Will it be a degree in 2014?
Yeah, will it?
2014, I should.
Question.
That is a very good question.
Because the concern is that it's being filtered, watered down, and it will be a diploma, or it will be
I can't imagine these days that it's going to be media communications. Is that right? It's where it's heading.
They said media and communications course.
Yep.
They didn't say media and communications degree.
I don't think you'd have many. That would be suicidal, I think. I don't think you'd have many people signing up for a course that isn't a degree anymore in an arts realm, because it's you know, a degree is basically the minimum, absolute minimum qualification, and a lot of places will be looking for masters and things like that these days. So going back to, I don't think a diploma is that relevant anymore as far as those sort of professions go.
Celine has a different view. Celine, I think if I might verbal you for a second, has a view that the degree for a course like journalism, or specifically for journalism, is pretty useless anyway. That it gets people into the front door, but then really the organisation, whether it's Fairfax, the ABC, whoever it is, really then has to start training.
Yeah. A degree does not a reporter make.
I agree with you. Thank you
much. But that's, you know, generally across the board, from what I've seen of degree courses around the place, and we've had a lot of young journalists through this place as well, that they're very academic, whereas journalism isn't academic. Journalism is very practical.
Yeah. They don't and quick.
Yeah, they, exactly. They don't generally say to people, all right, this course today is going to teach you how to source a story, go out and interview people, produce it and do it to deadline. I mean, that's not what they do. They do courses on ethics, on legal things, which are useful.
Yeah. I think the analytical side of writing assignments, essays, exams, all those kinds of things, doing some research, that's all really good. That's good groundwork. But the practical, I'm yet to see somebody with the practical experience coming out of these courses that you can put them straight in and they know the fundamentals.
Let me take the conversation back to, this is interesting, but this is journalists talking about journalism. Let's go back to Monash Gippsland. So we're not sure what shape this course will take.
Yep.
There are broader questions before this journalism course was dropped about the future of the campus there as well, whether it become independent of Monash University, whether it would merge with one of the local
get
TAFEs.
Its own autonomy.
Exactly.
The previous pro-vice chancellor had said before she left that there was a business model. They have to have a look at another look at its business model and find out, you know, whether it might be able to have more control over its own finances in a more autonomous fashion. And the student union, when those statements came out, were also saying, well, this is going to mean that you're going to cut courses, etc. And she said, no, but we're going to be adding courses to the whole curriculum, I guess you could say. But now, when there are courses being taken out of the schedule and there's double degrees that will be gone with visual arts and business and commerce and things like that, now with those gone, question marks again. What's the bigger picture here?
I wonder if there's any way of relating two sort of seemingly disparate subjects, and that is that The problem with country campuses is that lots and lots of kids. Well, the good thing about country campuses is for parents, they don't have to pay thousands of dollars every year to go and locate their son or daughter in a capital city and accommodate them and feed them and do all that sort of stuff.
Not that you're speaking from personal experience.
That's the only reason I'm working.
After this job, Mark will be going to his other job.
That's my other job. Yeah. Being in that situation, I know how that is. But, you know, kids are breaking – and the other thing is that kids are breaking their neck to go to Melbourne. You know, the country kids, a lot of them, the first thing they want to do is get out of home and go to Melbourne. So there's that, you know, difference, I suppose. But I wonder if they can analyse the type of student that wants to stay in a regional setting and what courses would suit those students specifically. Mm-hmm. Whether there is a type of course. I know they've got the nursing course and teaching. Nursing and teaching.
Yeah.
There are things that they can do in regional areas. Whereas, you know, journalism now, not so much in that a lot of the outlets for journalism are shrinking. I mean, it hasn't got a lot of future, you wouldn't think.
No. Well, and they said, you know, there was falling enrolment numbers in that course. And you would think that is an industry-wide thing as well.
Absolutely.
Because the whole type, it's changed. It's very multimedia now. And it's like even like arts courses or visual arts as well has changed to become more computer-oriented, but to become a more like a graphic art type of thing, because that's the future of it there. Another thing that's come out of this Monash that we here at ABC Gippsland have heard is that potentially its research arm might be reduced as well, or lost altogether. I think there was someone who was spearheading the research side of things at Monash University Gippsland, and our understanding is that his contract, I don't think, has been renewed, which means that if you're losing the foundation for research at a facility like that, what are you left with?
You're left with a TAFE.
Yeah,
basically.
That's what you're left with.
That's a pretty controversial thing to say, but that's what it is.
And I should also say, just a bit of context for those not familiar with the campus, not familiar with Gippsland. The journalism course, for instance, if you wanted to go to a journalism course in Melbourne, your TER, whatever it would be, they changed the letters for these things, your end of school certificate score would be significantly higher to enter the course in Melbourne than it would be in Gippsland. And it's purposely kept lower because regional kids, as a rule, right across Victoria and certainly in Gippsland, have come out of high school with less scores than they do in Melbourne. So therefore, it becomes a gateway into the industry for those who have perhaps underperformed at the high school level. But at the same time, great idea. At the same time, it dilutes the attraction of the course. Why would you go and do a course if you've got the scores, you go to Melbourne. Yeah. If you haven't got the scores, you go to Gippsland.
Mm.
So it doesn't necessarily help the selling of the course, I suppose.
No.
And that goes to the point about falling enrolments that you mentioned.
But they've got the same course, you know, being offered at, what is it, the Berwick campus or the Caulfield campus?
I think both.
As well. So, you know, it's kind of spread about. It's not like one campus is the key campus for journalism.
And I think you were saying the acting Pro Vice Chancellor, you were interviewing the other day, and he said that for the last few years there's only been 10 students or so at doing the journalism course in each year. Which isn't a lot.
In my first year at Deakin, there was 500.
Yeah, that's
500 in the first year for journalism. Mm.
And
the future, what do we know?
Well, what we know.
There's a question of morale. Let's talk about the morale. The reports of morale within the staff group.
Acting Pro Vice Chancellor said doesn't think there's an issue with morale.
But
anecdotally, and having spoken to academics, there is clearly an issue that basically they're saying this place is going downhill. Paraphrase that. Mm. But that's what we're hearing from them.
It's an easy catchphrase, though, isn't it? It's an easy catchphrase, particularly if you're in a faculty that you're in the faculty that's affected. I mean, there were plenty of faculties, or there would be some faculties that wouldn't be affected, or there's some courses that wouldn't be affected, who would be ticking along quite well. You'd think. So maybe it is, you know, a course related problem rather than a general problem.
I wonder too, like the university setting is usually quite, I see it as quite stable. I see it a bit like the public service. So when something does happen that's out of the ordinary, of course people are going
In tertiary education, I think there are parts, there are your core courses that don't change all that much. Mm. And, you know, I would have thought that things like engineering in the Latrobe Valley would have been like that, but that's proved not to be the case.
Exactly.
At Churchill. I mean, that went to Clayton. But in mainstream city universities, there would be courses on the periphery that are changing all the time, and that be changing with technology, like your design courses and things like that. Now that design has gone into engineering at places like Swinburne and things like that, whereas in the past it was more tending towards arts. So those things are changing all the time. But there would be core courses that you'd think would stay reasonably stable. Who knows?
The future?
Well,
just quickly.
I wonder if the future will be a merger with TAFE as proposed by the Central Gippsland or the Gipps TAFE CEO, Peter Whitley. In when they have flagged with government, each of the TAFEs were given an opportunity to flag with government some ideas by which they could meet the new funding regime for TAFE. That was one of the ideas that Peter Whitley from Gipps TAFE threw into the mix.
And
a merger.
Is there any notion that is actually being discussed?
I have been told that there has been some study of the delivery of TAFE courses by Monash University, Gippsland.
It's funny, this has always gone full circle, hasn't it? Because do you remember there was a transition stage where TAFEs were all certificate courses, and then they sort of started dabbling in the first year or two of degree courses, which could be transferred, and it seems to be a withdrawal from that system now.
I don't know. It used to be the Gippsland Institute of Advanced Education.
Which back in the day.
Yep.
Let's switch. We'll find out what's going to happen with that down the track. There's quite some considerable interest, clearly. Ambulance services in the news again this week. With what when I heard about this, I thought, gee whiz, this is an interesting story.
You told me.
Yeah, we got a whisper locally that ambulance services were told that their ability to use pain-killing drug, most notably
morphine.
Was being reduced. So they were told, you can't use morphine anymore, you have to use another drug, fentanyl, because there is a shortage of morphine. Mm. You picked up the story by speaking to the local manager of Ambulance Victoria.
Yep, this is, Victoria-wide, Australia-wide.
Global, perhaps.
And I did do a little search engine of morphine shortage, a little search on the internet, and there have been some changes by manufacturers to take the preservatives out of morphine. So it means they have to cook up a new recipe, pretty much, and by the time they get the old stock out and new stock in, it's a six-month delay. So I don't know whether that's the one, but obviously there's a lot going on in the manufacturing side of things, which has meant that there won't be morphine, but there will be fentanyl. And fentanyl is that drug that people might have heard about recently, that there have been fears that it's been a black market for fentanyl, and or whether that has been somehow bolstered by supplies that were stolen from Ambulance Victoria in recent times, or by unscrupulous types who have managed to get fentanyl from pharmacists who might have been involved in this or others. But there's a black market that's doing a roaring trade in this painkiller fentanyl.
Right. Mm. Ambulance officers I've spoken to say that it's not clear. It's hard to say whether one painkiller is better than another. It's all very subjective, of course. But the anecdotal sense is that
morphine.
I keep calling it methadone, don't I? Morphine, from the end user's point of view, is thought to be more effective. Now, whether it's because they've heard of morphine and we're giving you morphine, oh, thank God for that.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel better. Oh, fentanyl. What's fentanyl?
Yeah.
Maybe there's that headspace thing going on. But
I think the ambulance chap said that people who don't find morphine effective usually do find fentanyl effective.
Fentanyl's perhaps, it's supposed to be stronger, 100 times stronger than morphine.
It can't be 100 times stronger than morphine.
Apparently.
How do you measure that?
Well,
you'd use your fingers to begin with. Then you'd use your toes.
10 people with 10 fingers.
Quantity,
and then,
I suppose, isn't it?
Get them all to...
The dose might be smaller.
But it's also more expensive than... fentanyl is more expensive than morphine. So
now there's a technicality there too, because the intravenous fentanyl is the same, about the same cost as morphine.
It's the nasal one,
which is about 25 times more or something.
Yeah.
But it's not just used for people who get into car accidents, and morphine is just the stock standard acute, you know, or chronic pain relief drug, and it has been since the war, I think, or since the Second World War.
I don't remember.
People with morphine? No. No, I'm not talking about TV. You know, where's the morphine? Oi. But I know it's very widely used for things like cancer relief.
Yeah.
For people who have extreme pain problems, you know, with cancer, and it's an absolute staple with those. So it's not just, you know, used in ambulances. It is
used across the board.
Yeah. So this shortage is going to affect health centres and hospitals and everybody.
The way everybody does
as
stuff.
As well. Yeah. And there's also been some newspaper articles written in recent times about addiction, and fentanyl has been thrown into the mix for that. I don't know whether...
and fentanyl are both highly addictive. Yeah.
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 The Great Victorian Bike Ride. There's some of these folks could do some
painkiller.
We're
going to finish on a nice note today.
Some of these folks could do some painkiller medication. Great Victorian Bike Ride, a 9-day extravaganza through starting in Lakes Entrance, finishing in Phillip Island. We followed it through the Gippsland region. They've had the most exquisite weather, the most awful weather on some of their ride, but it's brought 4,000 people and a marching army of volunteers.
You tell us what you saw today when you went to the campsite at Yarragon. Yeah, stayed at the campsite.
I did stay at the campsite last
night.
What
was it like?
It was like, it reminded me actually of, do you remember the TV show Heidi High?
No, never heard of it.
Have you heard of Butlins? Butlins Holiday Camp in England?
Yeah.
Okay. It was a bit like that. It was a bit like, come on, everybody, we'll all have fun. And some of these people clearly thinking, get me to the bar. I don't want to have fun. I want to drink. So it's a bit of that, but at the same time, extraordinarily positive vibe out of the whole place of young kids, like some kids who couldn't even ride a bike. They were in the sort of the thing that you bolt onto the saddle, sort
like
of
little
thing.
Trailer.
Little
How
trailer.
How good an effort's that? Going
it would
up,
be fairly
going
effort.
Up a hill with a
fairly good effort.
Trailer with a kid.
And not
in
the hill, the Strzelecki's.
Yeah, that's right, a big mountain.
We call those mountains. Yeah. And the oldest people doing their 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th Great Victorian Bike Ride, and doing, you know, up to 100 kilometres a day.
No, I want to know the goss. Like, who did you camp next to? Where did you pitch
your
tent?
Some volunteers.
Yeah. And was it in the night time? Did you
wild
like,
parties?
You know, was there like games?
No, everyone was
people
exhausted.
Walking around with torches? Was there like ghost stories?
I didn't know, but I did hear of one high school from Northern Victoria, a young boy who somehow, I don't know, all these tents look alike, but found himself in a tent of a girls' school another part of Victoria.
By accident.
Accidentally on purpose.
Oh, sorry.
took him an hour to get out. Yeah. Because, you know, those tents look alike. But anyway, good luck to him, I say.
Yeah.
But an extraordinary.
And what sort of food did you have?
Last night was lamb hot pot.
Lamb hot pot?
Yeah, with
couscous.
So
they just like dole it up like in the army?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a bit of queuing up to do, isn't there?
A bit of queuing up, that's all right.
Yeah.
That's right. It's very well organised. Barcodes and this, that and the other. And then
barcodes.
Everyone's got barcodes. Yeah. And then this morning we set up the Yarragon Football Club rooms overlooking the Oval, and from 5 o'clock through till 8 o'clock when I left how many tents were there? About 2,000 tents. Slowly but surely disappear. We actually should have done time lapse. A photo
funny.
Every 15 minutes. I didn't think
I hate to say it, but the competition did that last night on the at Tarelgan, was it?
Was that what Wintelli?
Yeah, Wintelli did a lovely time lapse shot of all these tents going up, or just appearing. You know, popping up all over the place. It was very, very nice.
Oh, that's a good thing. Great minds think alike.
Yeah.
So extraordinary events in the region.
And did they have like flush toilets and things? I couldn't go on this thing.
Of
I'd need
they
a
have flush
toilet.
Toilets. They've got trucks. They've got big semi-trailers with all these little cubicles, and they've got shower cubicles and they've got toilet cubicles.
So you could, like, you know, have a nice shower and style your hair and do all that.
Yeah.
What would you style your hair for? You're going to put a helmet on it.
Yeah, but you want to look nice at tea time and things, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I suppose. There's a certain look, isn't there? There's a certain rustic look.
I wouldn't
look
be able to go on this, would I?
No,
I wouldn't cope. I'd need a flush toilet.
Yeah.
You'd be in one of those
few
little
cons.
You'd be in one of those little trailers at the back
no
of the bike.
No tent for me. I'd be in the motel in the next town.
In the Winnebago.
And people do that.
Do they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I walked up in the main street of Yarragon and every hotel was full.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Well, not there that many in the main street of Yarragon, but those that were all full, and there were bicycles outside every room. Mm. So people do, exactly, as Mark said, do that. And that economic footprint that it leaves is the most interesting, I think. $35 a day per participant, less for kids, but those that stay in hotels, perhaps those who are spending the kids' inheritance, those sorts of things, spending a little bit more. Rest day, I was in Traralgon on Wednesday when they had a rest day there. The place was heaving.
Mm.
Heaving. Wow. Every coffee shop, every sports store has had people in it. People buying this and that and the other. We had posts on our Facebook page that people were taking some of the Great Victorian bike riders up on four-wheel drive trips up to Walhalla. They went down to Trafalgar to the local swimming pool yesterday, these sorts of things. So all sorts of spin-offs.
Yeah, and inevitably, when you do go on those sort of rides, you inevitably go back, jump in a car and take the kids down. Yeah.
And that's what Terry Robinson told us from Destination Gippsland, that they've got access, they're piggybacking on the database so they can target people. They've got them with brochures. They're developing destination rides for people to come back to. So you think that there will be a ripple effect over the next few years of people coming back into the region. And everybody I spoke to said they couldn't believe how gorgeous Gippsland was. They thought it was, it is. People think, it's the Latrobe Valley.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with the Latrobe Valley,
stinky,
but it's not.
Smoggy, Bogan Valley.
It's not a holiday destination.
Well, that's what that research has done in more recent times. This is the perception of people is that it's stinky, it's smoggy, and bogans live there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what people said.
Yeah.
I actually said that when I got surveyed.
It is the hidden treasure, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's you've got the West Coast and the Otways, but I think the Strzelecki match that sort of look. And the South Coast. The South Coast is untouched.
Oh, here's a little point. Audrey, one of our listeners in Wisely, was telling me today she was up at Bruthen with the volunteers as they were heading through Bruthen, and they had their little tables with pamphlets and everything. And the people that were coming up and finding out more information, because at the start of the ride, everyone's all enthusiastic, that they said, they were picking up stuff relating to the rail trail and said, we'll come back and we'll do that rail trail. So they're finding already, hooking into, they're the things. We've seen it. Mm. We'll come back and we'll do it.
Mm. And if folks listening to the podcast want to listen to some of the audio from the this morning's Outside broadcast, particularly that stuff around tourism and the dollars that get spent, the audio from the interview with John Meyer from Bicycle Network Victoria and Terry Robinson from Destination Gippsland are both online at abc.net.au/Gippsland. Go to the programs tab and you'll find breakfast and it will all be there. Guys, we'll wrap it there. I've got to get my Lycra on and go for a bike ride now. I've been inspired.
I'm going to go and pitch a tent.
Good on you.
I reckon it'll be fun. I might do that this weekend and practice.
There's going to be a bit of rain this weekend, isn't it?
There is going to be a bit of
rain. Yeah, well, there you go.
What about your hair?
Oh, well, I have to get used to it if I've got to go on the ride and learn how to use
a
drop dunny. I think they've
solar powered hair dryer.
Can you make me one? You're an inventor.
He's an inventor. Mark Tabana could probably do that. More on next week's Week in Review.
Righty-o, see ya.